Blog Talk Radio.
Teacher watches each thought.
ready to select the best seeds of the spirit. M is the understanding of Buddhist teaching, lead one to the vital understanding of law, conceived upon the Mount of Light. His law will be of much help on the way to knowledge. His teaching is my joy. My hands lead to knowledge. Smile when spiritual beggars are called scholars. Smile when some speak irreverently about the spirit's understanding. When false books are read, when pure thoughts frighten the smile of the soul. Learn to consider a decree immutable. You will marvel when the waves of people will raise the pledge of ancient times. Ailments of spirit are as contagious as those of body. This is a simple scientific consideration. Strike upon a table and the objects will vibrate. So much more does a spirit blow shake the nerves. You may touch things and consciously expel the harm of accumulations. I find that interesting because it's very true. Once if you have a spiritual blow, a strike to your spirit, it does shake the nerves. It's unnerving when you find when it's out that you believed one thing and it was false. Or you believed someone and they were false. Or you believed in other things, you know. They proved to be wrong that you thought were so certain you were right about. That's when it affects your spirit. When beliefs, they embed themselves in your spirit, of course. But when you find out that they're wrong or you've been betrayed, or you betrayed yourself. It strikes the nerves, and it strikes you. It says you may touch old things and consciously expel the harm of accumulations. Now, in part two, we begin. In stanza one, it says, in love, forge the affirmation of the heights about the ability to control oneself. My teaching cannot be belittled by the foolishness of hostile slanderers. I see they will badly bruise their brows, but give them time. When we approach the commandment of Christ and Buddha, what is the dust of the threshold to us? An oyster shell without its contents. It's a wonderful thought, you know. It's really a wonderful thought. When we approach the commandment of Christ and Buddha, what is the dust of the threshold to us? An oyster shell without its contents. That's true. I mean, once we've elevated our spirits and become enlightened to the Christhood and the nirvana of Buddha, life is irrelevant. The physical body is irrelevant. We know that we're only here for a short time. And then everything else is transcendental, if you will, transformative. We no longer are dependent upon, or even care about our physical selves, because we're beyond that, and we're just embodying and becoming more emboldened. Emboldened with magnificent thoughts and joy and feelings, and we get that now. I get that now. I'm sure everybody does. At one time or another, we become almost irradiated with joy, you know. Or we could be that way with sadness as well. But I prefer to think of joy. Nothing makes me feel better than when I'm focused on a project and I'm focused on the completion of a project time just seems to be suspended and it moves on, but not for me. Before I know it, I'm 5, 6, 8 hours into something and I don't realize the time has gone so by so fast. Yeah, I realize I have other things I have to do right away, to, you know, errands I have to run or something I have to do, meant to do early in the morning, or and got waylaid. But I guess what I'm saying is that once there's a joy that we experience that's not of this world, it adapts itself to a physical presence, but it's really a spiritual one. And when you're involved with such a thing, you're not even aware of your physical body. Very strange, until it starts to, your back starts to ache, or your feet start to ache, or your eyes start to strain, or whatever it may be. But for some reason, there are those moments, especially in a creative person, where the world just seems to suspend its physical existence and transcend to a purely spiritual one. And you realize that you're almost suspended in air. That's your spirit. And our greatest possible place to be is the Christhood, or as in Buddha, the Buddha, or which is the, you know, nirvana, where you've reached, you know, completion of as a human being, as a spiritual being. And like I say, what is dust of the threshold to us? Once you've reached that, everything is, you know, dust in the physical world. And an oyster shell without its contents. That's what we are. We're like an oyster that's left. All we have is an empty shell. Display speed, he says. Spilled seeds are difficult to gather. Learn to comprehend the manifestation of the teaching as a miracle in order to manifest the shield on all paths. I feel each moment that is useful to you. Our front line stands as a wall. A smile flashes as lightning over all faces at each of your successful moves. As a gardener, see that the garden be covered with buds, uprooting the weeds, so we watch the movements of the chosen hands. Joyous is each resourcefulness because the shield is forged on both sides. Broad is my work, to everyone a place ordained. By the broadness of your vision will you allot your own part. And the manifestation of unprecedented possibilities is behind the door. And give us reason to rejoice. And, you know, this is like the words of a teacher and your creator, your father, your parent. And each person, each child, right, we can consider ourselves children in this, learning this text, or learning this lesson. And then it states that, you know, it's like as a gardener, see that the garden is covered with buds. Plant your buds, plant your seeds, you know, and uproot the weeds. And they watch the movements of the chosen hands. In other words, they watch the movements of their best students. And then joyous is each resourcefulness, because the shield is forged on both sides. And broad is my work, to everyone a place ordained. And by the broadness of your vision, will you allot your own part. So in this world that we exist in, that we live in our own creation, this master who is speaking for the divine, perhaps is the divine, and perhaps is even disguised as God, because God would disguise himself in these works, because, and or speak through others, because he would not want to reveal himself so immediately or so nakedly, if you will, to the untutored or the unsophisticated or the or even to the profane who might ridicule this work. So, like anyone who would write a poem, a good poem is one that has many layers, many hidden meanings, and is, can be read many, many times, and something new comes from it to the reader. And that's what this work is. It's a poem, but it's a multi-dimensional work, multi-layered work, and it teaches and continues to teach. But in this, is probably the most naked, if you will, of the many stanzas that we've read in the last year. It's stating, be speedy, be fast. Don't spill your seeds, but rather learn to comprehend the manifestation of the teaching as a miracle. Consider this teaching a miracle. Consider all great teachings as a miracle that we are fortunate enough to have them come into our lives, have them brought to us so that we can contemplate them and learn from them. In order to manifest the shield on all paths, I feel each moment that is useful to you. Our front line stands as a wall, and a smile flashes as lightning over all faces at each of your successful moves. As a gardener see that the garden be covered with buds, uprooting the weeds, so we watch the movements of the chosen hands. Joyous is each resourcefulness, because the shield is forged on both sides. Broad is my work, to everyone a place ordained. By the broadness of your vision will you allot your own part. The manifestation of unprecedented possibilities is behind the door. Give us reason to rejoice. In that passage alone is the key that unlocks this mystery, this work. And it's saying that in, or the way I read it, perhaps you can read it differently, but I read it in the way that it's saying we are given, we are gardeners, and we spread our buds. And the buds, as the buds start to go, as they start our seeds can be poured endlessly. They're saying don't just throw them wherever, but plant them wisely. And joyous is each resourcefulness, because the shield is forged on both sides. And if you recall, the shield is his shield and the shield of Moina. And that shield is the one that protects us, and the one that is forged on both sides, so that we are protected from every angle. And he wants us to, we not to worry about wind or rain or anything. Just know that, you know, he's that the seeds and we and our seeds are safe. And then he says, broad is my work, to everyone a place ordained. So he's saying that everybody has a place in the universe. Everyone has a place, and it's ordained that they are alive in their spirit, and they're guaranteed this place. But then he says, by the broadness of your vision, you will allot your own part. So, in other words, no matter how, you know, if you, the larger your vision, greater the scope of your understanding and illumination, the greater will be your part in this universe, in this creation, in this marvelous, infinite creation of God. And the manifestation of unprecedented possibilities is behind the door. And he said, there it is. You can manifest unprecedented possibilities. It's right there behind this door. And the door is the door that leads to the next phase, or to the next phrase. But he says, give us reason to rejoice. So as a teacher, And as his creator, he's saying, give me a reason to be thrilled with your understanding. And your acceptance of my gift. And in stanza 4 it says, it is good to be in the sunshine, but the starlit sky also brings harmony to the nerves. The moon, on the contrary, is not for us. The moon's pure light affects the prana, and the magnetism of the moon is great. But for repose, it is not good. Often, the moon evokes fatigue, like people who devour one's vital energy. The manifestation of miraculous power increases during moonlight. Manifestation. Now, this is an interesting article. This is an interesting phase, too, and I'd like to read it again. Now, I'm sorry that I may be redundant to you, but if you're listening, please move on to the next stanza or the next one. Wouldn't surprise me that whoever is listening may be far, far in advance of my own understanding of this. And please, I don't wish to hinder you on this. I'm just introducing it to you. But if you feel like going on and further, please do. Just don't be stymied by my slowness, okay? But I feel that oftentimes I have to read these things two or three times for them to kick in to my own mind so that I can move on. But if you remember, the manifestation of unprecedented possibilities is behind the door. Give us reason to rejoice. So they're saying, what's next is for you to grasp this and give them reason to rejoice. Don't speed through this. Don't rush yourself through this. Savor each word and savor each thought, and let it grow within you as a beacon that you can refer to and when you're lost and when you need that wisdom. And I found over time, many times since I've been working on this book and trying to interpret this book to myself and others, I found that through the course of a day when I need an inspiration or I'm seeking some kind of an answer to something, sometimes these words will come back to me and they'll solve the problem. Or if not solve the issue, they'll allow me to gloss over it and look upon whatever the problem may be as simply a petty inconvenience or a minor obstacle to overcome. And that's what these works bring to me. And I'm going to read that stanza 4 one more time and move on to 5. It is good to be in the sunshine, but the starlit sky also brings harmony to the nerves. That's true. We know that. That resonates with me because I can feel it. I can understand what he's saying, and I see the starlit sky, and know what it does to me, especially in the summertime. It's clear and warm outside. The moon, on the contrary, is not for us. And in some way, that's true too, because when you look at the moon, it's a kind of a stunning reminder of the day, or a stunning reminder of your mortality in some way, because it when it's out and it's clear, it magnifies the intensity of the light of the sun. Because that's basically what it does. It has no light of its own. It just reflects the light of the sun against it. And in some days, some nights it's so bright, so luminous, it just radiates. And other nights it's very dim, which is odd. But it could be dim because of cloud cover or distance or angle or whatever it may be. On the contrary, is not for us. And I can understand that in some ways because I'm drawn into the night sky and I'm drawn into distant. When I look at distant planets, I'm drawn. I feel that magnet, if you will, that we talked about in several of the books, especially the Book of Heart, where we talked about the magnet, and the magnet, the great magnet, draws us to the center of the universe, draws us to the center of our souls. And then it contradicts itself and says, this thing that says the moon's pure light affects the prana, and that's what I stated, was that some nights when that pure direct sunlight reflects against the moon, it takes on its own aura and it becomes alive and dancing in the skies, almost just gleaming like a sun, like a minor sun. And the magnetism of the moon is great, but for repose it is not good. And that's true. If you wish to rest, or if you wish to meditate or so on, you find that the pull of a full moon, or even the pull of the moon, makes you agitated, agitates you. And you know that in the full moons, we are agitated. And of course it's known that insane asylums and prisons and so many things go nutty under a full moon, rather crazy under full moon. So a full moon draws us, just like an ebb tide draws the tide out and in, and that's what happens with a full moon. So it isn't good for repose, but except on the nights that it's remarkably clear and close and mystifying. And then it says, the miraculous power. Often the moon evokes fatigue, like people who devour one's vital energy. And the manifestation of miraculous power increases during moonlight. A pure prana might respond to the attraction. Otherwise, there is no miracle but a destruction of the vital treasure trove. While resting, it is good to laugh, for the thyroid gland is purified by laughter. To purify the gland is a primary duty. So, we must laugh. Never take ourselves too seriously. Always find things to laugh about, things to have fun with, and not to take, yourself too seriously. And Shambhala is the indispensable site where the spiritual world unites with the material one. As in a magnet, there exists a point of utmost attraction to the gates of the spiritual world open into the mountain dwelling. The manifested height of Varishankar helps the magnetic current. Jacob's ladder is the symbol of Aradob. And if anybody is aware of Jacob's ladder, that was the ladder of ascension. Jacob slept on his ear, Jacob's pillow, and he slept and appeared to him a ladder, and he walked the ladder and he ascended into heaven. And God spoke to him. And that's in the Old Testament. And it's a symbol of their abode. In other words, they're taking a common archetype of a spiritual ladder, or the vision of a ladder, and using it to evoke the gateway, if you will, to the where they live, to the fourth dimension, fifth dimension, or whatever dimension it is. Is wherever the spiritual realm is, or the ethereal realm, which is, they haven't quite explained that it's that, but it's similar to that, I'm assuming. I have to assume, because I really don't know, other than it's possibly the fourth dimension. They mentioned it rather well in the calling, or the call, which is the first book. it is like another dimension, fourth or fifth or sixth dimension. It's beyond our earthly experience, but we can reach there. And they're saying, with their help and with the visions that we manifest, that we ourselves manifest, we can reach with their help and their guidance, we can achieve this wonderful ascension to a higher plane and an illumination far, far beyond our common lives and our mundane existences. Superstition can be driven out only by respecting the forces innate to man. One must know how people are awaiting my coming. People's desire forges a new rung for the ladder. Yeah. So that makes it even more interesting, because the more we desire, it seems like the further we have to go to reach that nirvana. Rather than desire for material gains or for knowledge or for whatnot, even for illumination, what we must understand is that the illumination is within us. It's not outside of us. It's within us. And if we are looking or searching to go to climb a ladder, to ascend, it seems like an excessive amount of work to go to some place we don't even know. Whereas if we simply meditate upon our own existence and expand that vision within ourselves as opposed to outside of ourselves, expand the vision of knowledge to within us, and understanding and illumination and enlightenment that we are, and not something that we can achieve from outside, not something that we can get or climb to, or ladder that we climb up to some place unknown. Instead, we must expand our vision, if you will, and the ladder, if you wish to use the ladder as that image, then erect the ladder into ourselves, going down deep into the center. Let's descend deep into the center of our souls, and that's where we will find ourselves, and that's where we'll be able to manifest this enlightenment and all desires, everything that we ever wished for or dreamed possible, or dreamed to own, have, create, whatever it may be, can be done, but not from accumulating it from the outside. It doesn't exist outside of us. It exists within us. Everything we desire doesn't exist outside of us. It exists within us. I read something interesting the other day on holographic experiences that state that we are holographic. We are holographic. We are the projectors, if you will, of holographic images. In other words, everything that's around us really is made up of the same molecular structure as we are. It's molecules, it's atoms, and it's space, it's time. They're not really connected within that. It's only holographic. Our existence is holographic. And our death, our life, our meaning to life, and everything within our life first comes from within us, not from outside of us. The desire to be born, it stated, is the desire for reincarnation. We are the driving force of that, strangely enough. And our karma is the, which they speak about greatly in this work, but our karma is the driving impetus, the driving force that makes us come back to Earth, that makes us come back into life, to re-experience something that we missed, to learn something that's vital to our ascendancy as human, as highly evolved human spirits, and possibly not even human spirits. We may be already evolved spirits, but we, if anybody has ever read anything on the, forget it now, I believe I still have the book, Uranus, book, the book of, Book of Uranus, yeah, and how the followers of this specific belief and work and book that was this book was actually channeled through extraterrestrial beings through an individual who would fall asleep and suddenly he would go, suddenly the entities would talk from him, would talk to his wife, and his wife was a neighbor. They were neighbors of a very famous psychologist or psychiatrist, and I forget his name at this point, but very famous psychiatrist, very well known, father of modern psychology, who went over to look at the man at the request of his daughter, at the request of his wife, and he noticed, he saw him in a trance, and he saw him sleeping, but he was very much asleep, but he was talking to her. There was somebody in there aware that that they had entered the room, but it wasn't the individual that was sleeping, the man sleeping. And his wife said this has been happening to him quite a bit now lately. And what's happening is the man had opened up his channeling, his mind, his subconscious, I believe, or conscious. And what was happening is his spiritual entities were coming into his body. They were coming into his body, and coming in. And there were several. There were many that were. They called themselves travelers, spiritual travelers, and they were, you know, they were using this medium to communicate to people, and now they were able to communicate with the psychologist, who actually, or psychiatrist, who actually started to write down what he heard and ask questions to the FD about the creation and every possible imaginable question that could be asked about the metaphysical, some metaphysical, astrological, astronomical, physical, universal issues that they could think of. And once he ran out of questions to ask, he went to his friends, who were also, well, you know, psychologists and thinkers and psychiatrists, and they formulated a list of questions for this man to ask, and the psychiatrist went back, the famous psychiatrist went back, and asked this man, who was sleeping again, these questions, and it became a routine thing until all the questions imaginable that they could ask were answered through these different spiritual entities that were channeled through this individual. And this is all work that was recorded. And tales, and phenomenal tales, hard to believe. But in their own way, they explained the creation. They explained much of what was happening, and they explained Christianity and other religions and all this other stuff. But I guess that's what I'm saying is that everything, it is fascinating that this man was used as a channel, but this passage here that says superstition can be drawn out only by respecting the forces innate in man, and one must know how people are waiting my coming, People's desires forge a new rung for the ladder. Like I said, people's desires bring about anticipation and anxiety. And again, this ladder adds another rung, so there's just that much further that you have to go to find out. And possibly, once you reach there, you have to go another ladder. But when you reach, you don't know where you're going, but when you go into yourself, you haven't left the earth, you haven't left your home, you haven't left security of knowing where you are, but simply knowing that you're going into yourself and you're perfectly solid, perfectly fine, whatever your physical nature may be. But that if you go further into yourself and descend further, or I can't even say, I was going to say ascend on that ladder, but ascend it through, ascending through you, you're not going anywhere. You're staying still. But your mind, your spirit is ascending. Your spirit is walking, descending, or ascending, or whatever it is. It's up to you to make certain that it's centered, that it's directed properly, guided properly to the center of your soul, and not to not to hide from yourself, not to hide from yourself, but rather to merge closer into yourself, as far down deep into the center of your being that you possibly can. And once you have arrived, and I say you, and I mean this in the sense of your ego, of who you are, of who you've manifested yourself to be, or who, you know, you wish to be, or whatever it may be, but whoever you really are, or you think you are, in all of its maniacal vanity, then I say, please, what you have to do is go into, withdraw into yourself, seeking the innermost part of you. And once you do that, once you reach that point, which I think I have on certain occasions, not all the time, but I think at some moments I've actually reached in meditation and creativity, I've reached places in myself that placed myself that I found miraculous to be there, because it was timeless and spaceless. It was there. I was in the center of myself. That's a wonderful place to be, and I strive often to try to find that place again, but so often for some reason, I don't seem to have time or the ability to do it all the time, to focus that clearly, and I get rattled. Again, certain times, certain days, certain moments, I can find that spot, and it rejuvenates me in all ways. And I come forth a new person, revived and feeling wonderful or feeling better or feeling whatever. But that's where it is. That's where I am at sometimes. And I wish to be there all the time if I can. But that's what they call the zone. We've talked about that, and if anybody's followed our Friday night shows, 2 weeks ago I played a lecture by Zell Lungold, Ian Zell Lungold, who was explaining the what was about to happen to us in the sixth day of the galactic period of the Mayan calendar, which is now, right now, occurring this moment as we're talking. And we'll be into that period for the next year. And what he stated was there where we must be, where we must arrive by the year 2012, and where we must strive to become is in the zone. In that zone, meaning in the moment, in ourselves, in a perfect harmony with the world, with whatever it may be, but where we are masters of our game, or we are masters of our of ourselves, and intuition takes over rather than our minds or our egos. Intuition is our guide and leads us to where we are going, or where we need to go. And that's what that new rung for the ladder is. Let us look at that as the where the new rung of that great ladder, that vision is, and that's to finding ourselves. And the density of matter obstructs each experiment of the spirit. And again, that's just what I was saying. We lose ourselves and our focus. In this concern, men are well at the whole of nature. Men as well at the whole of nature. For access to it matters, access to its matter must be melted. In the process of smelting, there is produced a specific gas which assimilates with the substance of the spirit. In man, gas emanates from the nerve centers at each ecstasy of happiness or unhappiness. Thus, a laboratory of the spirit is obtained. Therefore, a misfortune is called the visitation of God, but each somnolent existence is death of spirit. In nature, ecstasy is manifest as thunderstorms, earthquakes, eruptions of volcanoes, and floods. A similar laboratory spirit begins to work. Hence, all sparks of ecstasy are blessed. Molten matter yields to improvement and provides new formula. Instead of prolonged searches, it suffices to reflect the elements in our mirrors, and then to accumulate new formula. Then remains the second part of the work, patiently and in due time to give them to people. Upon the fires of ecstasy travels our ray, seeking admittance into the heart. Where is the happiness or fortune, misfortune that has opened the entry? By contracting molten matter, one senses the pulse of earth, and the heart must withstand the gravitation. Those who will take part in this work must guard their hearts. Therefore I say, guard the heart. All else is easy to repair. It represents matter, whereas the nerves are subservient to the spirit. At the knock of the spirit, the door of the solar plexus is opened, but each stroke of heart beats upon the heart. Whosoever wishes to come in touch with the formula of matter must guard the heart. Our medicine teaches how to strengthen the heart through breathing, but about this another time. And again, whosoever wishes to come in touch with the formula of matter must guard the heart. So what I'm gathering from this is that as we go further into the discoveries of our selves, they have brought up this grand discoveries, miraculous moments of awareness and illumination come to us through tragedies or through natural emergencies or through tremendous rushes of adrenaline and depression and joy and laughter and sorrow and anger. And these are things that all become emotional. These are all tied to the emotions. And this is why they're saying guard the heart, because the heart is the vessel or the organ that pumps and that provides the blood throughout. And these maladies, if you will, miracles or unexpected tragedies or events or ecstatic events that happen that, you know, one can't believe, like winning a lotto or, having a child or being, you know, these moments. say it works on the heart. And it affects the heart. So we must try to protect the heart at all times and not become overly stressed by these incidences, but rather to allow ourselves to be within, again, I say, with not by using our intuition and by having faith in a greater intelligence and having a strong belief in your destiny, or at least in your path, that you are on a path, that you won't waver from that path, that will calm the heart, strengthen the body, and strengthen the journey that you're on, because it will give you strength. And I know that for a fact, because in the many trials and tribulations of my own life, as I'm sure in your own life, that focus upon your duty, or that focus upon your responsibility, that focus upon your desire, that focus upon your goal, whatever it may be, whatever you may be tightly focused upon, will overwhelm all other cares that you have. And sooner and before you know it, you will overcome these obstacles because they become superfluous to you. And in many ways, they'll heal themselves, take care of themselves. Or you'll be able to appreciate the great ones and appreciate the highs and lows of your own life and the experiences that you've had, simply by allowing your heart to, yes, accept, you know, allow your heart to interpret these things in your life, but at the same time guarding by allowing them to be allowing your heart to be the intellectual rather than the emotional. It allows you to override these moments of panic and stress and grief, or whatever may be the moment that it brings, and allows you to enter the zone and use your and tap into your intuition, and allows you to overcome in the proper way, right way, overcome all the problems that you're facing. And in that way, we are preserving our heart, we're protecting the heart, protecting the body, we're protecting our minds, but at the same time accepting the experiences as they come. But again, we're talking about Moina's shield, which is forged on both sides, and it protects us from the outside and from the inside. And by doing that, we have to have faith that there is a much greater, far, far greater intelligence, if you will, guiding our lives. And we can tap into that at any time, provided we have faith and seek the answer through our intuition and through our faith and through our wisdom, acquired wisdom as well, through life. And, you know, for a young person, they may not have great wisdom yet, because wisdom comes with experience, but they may not have great knowledge, but they do have intuition. That's why a child knows right from wrong at an early age. And, you know, can be a pure of heart. So, anyway, I'm going to read one more paragraph, and then I think we'll end this story, the show tonight. But, and I might even finish with a further rendition of this, ongoing musical piece. The nerve emanation is imponderable. It is odorless and invisible because it is of the spirit. The product of the heart is blood in all its earthly dimensions. Therefore, when it is said that one must feel with the heart, this means it should be adapted to the earthly plane. The sole bridge between the spirit's understanding and the embracement of the earthly plane is the white blood corpuscle. But you know what conflict attends their existence. Do not the white corpuscles, subject to the forces of earth and bearing the knowledge of spirit, seem to you like white brothers? This is why harmony is so difficult on earth. But to work there, where the spirit is descended into matter, the conditions of both planes must be met. One should not estrange oneself from the earthly, yet one must abide in the spirit. For the mastery of the earthly formulae, one must possess a strong channel of the heart, because the reflux of the earthly signs carries dangerous sparks. But for earth, all must be accomplished upon the earthly plane. Therein is the chief reason for the existence of the Brotherhood here. Therefore, upon earth one must reach us, discover us, as silver ore, the best beneath the earthly crust. And I guess that's where we're at. You know, by discovering Moina and this work, and by discovering God in ourselves, our inner selves, that's how we survive. But we have to survive understanding the earthly connections and spiritual connection. That we are a duopoly, if you will, or a dichotomy of a spirit and a body. And we have to know that one reacts to the other. And the heart is the most fragile muscle, is the most affected of all nerves or anything else. The heart is the magnet to all of our receptors. And if we overwhelm the heart to the point of weakening it, then we die, our physical death. And fortunately, that's what happens. So I want to thank everybody and for being with me tonight. And I hope you learned something. Tomorrow night we will be speaking with with George Dixon, and he will be talking about the Mayan calendar again. George just made a big move to upstate New York, and with a new home there that he's finally settled in, and hopefully he'll be in good shape tomorrow and to speak with us tomorrow night at 8 o'clock. So please join us then, and hope you can be hope you'll enjoy the show. And good evening, Cryptic, if you're still there. Thank you for listening, and others who've joined us tonight, and I hope you see you tomorrow night. The show is just about over, and I want to thank everybody for listening. I'd like to play that song, but I may not have time. But anyway, it may go over. But I think I'll continue. I think I'll end tonight where I began, which was in the middle of this song that I've been creating, or this symphony. It's actually a symphony of sorts. And I hope that we can get there with me. And good night. good night. See you tomorrow.